Hi, everybody. This is Janice Gray, Executive Consultant with DTA Associates, and I am so excited to host this podcast today. And my guest is Samson Mile. Samson and I had a chance to connect, just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about all things telehealth and really just enjoy the chance to get acquainted. And he's done a lot of great work in his background, and I thought it would be great to feature him on our podcast today. Welcome, Samson. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, before we dive into all my crazy questions I'd love to ask you, I'm just going to share a little bit about your background and bio, just so everyone else can know a little bit about you too. So Samson Mile is the Chief Operating Officer at the Ritter Center. Ritter Center is a federally qualified healthcare center serving low-income and homeless populations in Marin County. The healthcare center provides medical, behavioral health, outpatient substance use treatment, respite care, whole person care, housing management, and pantry services. Samson has spent the past 2 years at Ritter Center overseeing large-scale initiatives related to integration and redesign of care delivery systems. Samson received his undergraduate degree from California State University, East Bay, in sociology, with a concentration in social work and a master's of science degree in healthcare administration with a focus on management and change in healthcare. His passion for healthcare stems from growing up in Oakland, California, where he witnessed firsthand the prevalence of inadequate healthcare in disadvantaged communities. Samson wants to do his part to ensure that everyone, regardless of socioeconomic background, receives quality healthcare. And Samson believes that working with organizations that strive to deliver the best service possible, and he's committed to continual quality improvement. In his leisure time, Samson enjoys exploring new places, biking, healthy living, and the great outdoors. Wow, that's tremendous, Samson. I love seeing so many of the amazing things that you're passionate about and the great work that you're doing. We even share a background in social work and the MHA, so no wonder we were quick to connect when we first got to chat. Thanks again for coming on and being willing to share a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited
to be here. So first off, I guess I should actually ask this. You know, we're chatting here in early fall of 2020. How are things going there this week? I mean, you guys have had quite the stem of weather and the fires and the air quality. You know, how are things going right now?
Things are back to normal as of 2 days ago, but, you know, felt like it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
With the fires happening. I woke up one morning, everything was red, smoke everywhere, you know, with COVID and then fires, the unrest that is happening. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's just, you know, everything added up and just felt like, wow, just another thing.
Yeah. So it sounds like things are clearing a little bit, at least in the air, and some progress with the fires.
Yeah, I am in the East Bay where I'm at.
Okay.
It cleared up about 2 days ago.
Wonderful.
Basically back to normal now.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, and, you know, I mentioned a little bit about the Ritter Center when I was sharing your bio, but can you just tell us a little bit more about the Ritter Center, the work that you do there, the patients and the population that you serve?
Sure. So Ritter Center started off as a social service agency in the 70s, and it was a part of a movement for social justice, which grew out of the civil rights movement. And healthcare was added to Ritter Center in the early 90s as a freestanding clinic, where in 2012 we became FQHC.
Okay.
And
great.
We provide, you know, medical, behavioral health services, respite care, substance use treatment, as well as pantry services, which you touched on the bio.
Yeah. No, it seems like a very comprehensive program that you all have there. So I know you mentioned COVID among the many things that have been going on this year. I wonder if we can go back in time and it probably feels like 2-3 years ago, but let's go back just to like end of 2019, you know, December, headed even into January of 2020, what was your telehealth strategy like? And did you have one for the Ritter Center?
So we were in the process of implementing telepsych at Ritter Center. And we were supposed to go live in May. Yeah, we were supposed to go live in May. And what we had envisioned was for us to set up a telepsych room in the clinic where our patients would be able to come and see a provider via, you know, video in the clinic. But with COVID happening, that got a little bit off track, where we weren't allowing patients to come to clinic for services.
Yeah. So how like in January, your strategy was to have telepsych up and running by May. What happened in February, March, and how did, you know, tell us a little bit about that story. How did COVID impact the clinic and how did you all have to adapt?
So COVID hit and I think on the 16th of March, we ended up closing our clinic, and following day, we started reaching out to patients via phone. And the following week, we put together a virtual population management strategy. We broke it down to three waves. First wave was to generate a list of patients with diabetes, HIV, asthma, COPD. And we focused on reaching out to those patients, you know, for 2 weeks. The second way was to generate a list of patients with heart disease, kidney disease, and compromised immune system, and of individuals that are over the age of 65. And third wave was to generate a list of patients with serious mental illness. And our patients really loved the attention that they were getting from our providers. Because they were calling, they were loving it. Mm-hmm. But you know, as time went on, they got used to the new normal, and it kind of got hard to get a hold of patients.
Yeah, so it sounds like you stratified right into those three different groups or three waves of different patients based on, you know, clinical and other priorities, and you had providers reaching out to them, checking on them, seeing how they were doing since you weren't having the in-person visits. Did you end up offering like the telehealth services then via phone in that way? Or, you know, what kind of happened as you moved into springtime?
Yeah. So, you know, we learned that, you know, not all our patients have access to phones, and not all our patients have access to smartphones or computers. You know, most of our patients are experiencing homelessness. And, you know, what some of the things that we did was we put a budget together to purchase phones for individuals that were at high risk for COVID that needed to get, that needed to be seen by a provider as well as by our therapist.
So you were able to equip those who didn't have a means to that technology by giving them some phones so that they could access their providers that way.
Yes.
Okay. If you think back to like, gosh, it's so hard to think back, but you know, March, April, May-ish time, or, you know, into June even, you know, before you were having people back in person in the clinic, you know, how many patients were you able to connect with, or, you know, how well utilized were these telehealth services that you were offering at that point?
Well, when we first started offering televisits, we were able to see a lot more patients than we would than before COVID, which was interesting because we functioned as a walk-in clinic, our primary care clinic did. And, you know, with televisits, the amount of visits actually increased by 20% at the time.
So how long did that go that you were doing more of the telehealth visits? And then when, you know, has there been a transition back to any in-person visits since then?
Yeah, so what we did was on March 17, we actually closed our clinic for 7 days to come up with, you know, a workflow that is safe for our staff as well as our patients. And we had a shortage of PPE as well. We couldn't get PPE anywhere. Ugh. And you know, we needed to make sure that, you know, we had enough PPE for our staff before we could open back up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we came up with a plan to open 3 days a week, just Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and to provide televisits on 2 days. We took behavioral services completely virtual and allowed primary care to be operating on 3 days a week. And we still are on the same operation time right now. Our clinic is open 3 days a week and everything else is via virtual.
Wow. So that back in March when you had to, you know, regroup and come up with that strategy in just a real short period of time, it's almost like you had to accelerate that telehealth strategy when you wanted to let, you know, telepsych was going to be launched in May, and it kind of got catapulted a little bit further forward with having to start kind of mid-March then. Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, it's tremendous. I think so many people have had to kind of accelerate strategies like that in such a short period of time. And then it's really interesting to hear too, that's pretty much, you kind of developed a new model that sounds like it's been sustained. Is that, am I hearing that right?
Yes, it has been sustained. I mean, there are some challenges now, you know, where our patients are not getting the care that, you know, other patients with technology are getting. For instance, there is a difference between a phone visit and a video visit, and not every patient that we have the access to do a video visit.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's ongoing challenges with the model, even though there's some benefits too, right?
Yes. Especially for patients that we are serving that are experiencing homelessness.
Mm-hmm. I am curious, thinking about that week where you kind of regrouped, shut down, and got ready to launch very quickly, how did you prepare your providers for the televisits or virtual visits? Like, were there any kind of, you know, especially for video visits, I guess I'm thinking, like, any kind of rules or standards of professionalism or just kind of like guidance about that you put in place?
Well, I mean, first instinct was to just make sure that, you know, our patients are taken care of, you know, let's check on them. But, you know, at first week after we opened up, we came up with the virtual population management strategy, and we sure that, you know, we went live with ECW Helos, the video platform, where I think we had some providers that were using DoxyMe as well, but we made a point that, you know, we'll just stick with one platform, and this is what we'll use, this will work for us. And you know, it was a challenge a little bit at first, but I think everyone got on board, and you know, we have been using that same system. Our CMO did you know, a lot of work with our providers to make sure that you know, they follow a guideline as far as you know, when they reach out to patients that with different type of chronic illness, you know, how to key standardize, you know, workflow. Mm-hmm. How they could follow based on, you know, what the reason they are calling the patient on.
Sure. And I know you mentioned like the televisits were, you know, patients were initially kind of really pleased. What are you hearing now that we're, you know, 6 months down the line? What do you hear from patients about this new model, you know, with the mix of the in-clinic for primary care, the 3 days a week, and then the virtual visits and televisit for, you know, those other two? What kind of feedback do you get from your patient population?
I mean, I think, our population are used to the new way that we are providing care now. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, or before they were really excited because they felt like they were being cared for. Now it's just like basically our North Shore rate is starting to creep back up.
Is it? Okay. So it sounds like things have sort of adapted into, I hate to use this because we're hearing it all the time, but sort of the new normal, right?
Yep.
You know, and I think there's something interesting in what you said too, because I've experienced this myself and I'm hearing this from others. Now that we've had an experience with a virtual visit or a televisit and the chance to do it more conveniently, let's say, for certain things, it will be very hard to ever go back to, quote, the old way, you know, like, and I think you're kind of, that's what I'm hearing from you somewhat in your patients. Like initially they were totally wowed by it. And now it's like also just kind of the new expectation or the new way that they know they can access care. Is that fair? A fair summary of what
Absolutely.
You're hearing?
Yeah, that is a fair summary. Yeah. They have adjusted and it'll be hard to go to the old way. I mean, with telemedicine, you know, it has opened up access to care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the population that we serve, you know, it has improved access to care, but there is still a significant care gap remain for people experiencing homelessness.
Yeah.
As I stated, you know, not everyone has a computer or a smartphone or a video visit for a visit with a provider.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's great about the great mix that you guys have, right? So the 3 days a week for the in-person or the walk-in for primary care, and then the video visits on the other days. Is that mix, I know you were saying you're seeing more patients initially via televisit, like is that mix kind of a 60-40 of 60 in-person versus 40 video, or do you find that you see more patients on those virtual visit days, that the volumes are more balanced?
About 45% to 55%, 45% for tele and televisits and 55% for in-person. Yeah, and we provide other services as well. We provide food pantry as well as housing case management services on the days that we are open. We used to provide laundry and shower services, but since COVID, we haven't been providing those services. So, you know, people would come to us for, you know, for food or for laundry, and they will see a provider at the same time because everything is in-house.
Mm-hmm. It does sound like a phenomenal setup that you guys have in terms of really serving the whole person, right? All of those different needs, be it, you know, admittedly pre-COVID with the shower laundry piece, but still the food service, the housing consults, the primary care and the chance to see a provider. That's truly, every time I talk to you, I feel like I get a more fuller picture of what the great work you guys are doing there. So still just really pleased with to know about your program and services. I guess the question I have is, here we are rounding into the fourth quarter of 2020. And I'm just curious, based on this whole experience, what do you feel like you've learned this year about telehealth, about providing care and difficulties? Just what learnings come to mind when you think of this year thus far?
I would say that, you know, I learned telehealth has helped improve access to care. It is an amazing thing for our patients.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the population that we serve, you know, there is significant care gap because of, you know, their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep saying to people, to, you know, individuals that we serve, because we specialize in healthcare for the homeless, and you know, it was already challenging to serve, you know, that
mm-hmm.
prior to COVID, but you know, there will always be challenges because, you know, they are limited into you know, there is some limitations, you know, whether it's housing, technology, or even mental status.
So my last question is really just with an eye to the future, kind of in light of some of what you shared there is there's the work that's yet to be done to try to close that care gap for folks. What do you think the takeaways are, and what are you leaning into as you all are moving forward there and as you look ahead into the year yet to come?
And I would say that, you know, people experiencing homelessness have high levels of exposure to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Due to issues related to sheltering and work and being without a permanent home, you know, sheltering in place is not an effective option for people experiencing homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to improve health of people experiencing homelessness is to house them. Housing is healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just, Samson, thank you for joining today and for sharing about the great work that you guys are doing. And at the same time, I really appreciate the chance to really delve a little bit deeper into this and to think about some of the ways in which healthcare has had to adapt this year, and in particular, the unique needs and challenges for the patients that you're serving in the services that you all provide. So thank you for joining me. Thanks for the great work that you're doing. And I wish you and your colleagues and your team there all the best, and just keep doing what you're doing, because it's amazing to have programs and services like yours in our world and in our community, especially in years like this. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me, Janice.
Yeah, take care.